Shalom, Mishpacha. Shalom, family. Mishpacha is a Hebrew word. It means family. And we're the Mishpacha, the family with a Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people, where the middle wall of separation between Jew and Gentile has come down to form one new man. Getting ready, Mishpacha, to blow the grandest shofar, or the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone, everywhere to hear the good news. We want everyone, everywhere to be red hot for the Messiah. My guest, Perry Stone, he's talking about the feasts of Israel, and God calls them my feasts. And the word feast in the Hebrew, modim, means my appointments. And everyone that loves God should understand the appointments of God. But Perry, you have uncovered such codes and mysteries in these feasts. Some of them I've just never even pondered before. For instance, if you just step down from the major seven feasts and you go to some of the other feasts like Purim, which is based on the Book of Esther, the secret codes in them. Tell me one revelation you got on the Feast of Purim from the Book of Esther.
Well, that is the time, just for those who may not be familiar in your audience, Haman, who was an Agagite, who was a descendant of King Agag, you know, from that day, he was an enemy of the Jewish people. He sought a plan, a plot, a strategy, a conspiracy to have the Jews killed in all these 127 provinces that was being ruled by the king of Persia in that day. Esther became the queen.
Isn't it interesting that Persia is the ancient name for Iran? So there's a lot of parallels with today, but go ahead.
Absolutely. And Iran is one of the big enemies of Israel, one of the big in the whole part of the world today, which is it's a repeat. And in this story, this is where it gets interesting. Haman becomes a picture of the Antichrist because he had 10 sons, and they built 10 gallows to kill the Jewish people. And that the 10 sons, if you know, and I know you do, but for the audience, there's scriptures and prophecy in the book of Daniel, also the book of Revelation, at the time of the end, there's going to be 10 kings who will align themselves with the Antichrist in the destruction of the Jewish people in Israel. Now, in the story of Esther, the gallows that built for Haman, for the Jews, Haman's 10 sons were hung on those gallows. And the Jewish people came out victorious because of a queen named Esther. Now, there's a lot of ways we can look at Esther. For example, the woman in the book of Revelation giving travail is Israel. So Israel, it can be compared to a woman in prophetic symbolism. So if we say that Esther is the woman, and or is Israel, and that Haman is the Antichrist, and the 10 sons represent the 10 kings, and what will happen is right at the time that it looks like the Jews are about to be annihilated, which would be toward the end of the tribulation, God is going to intervene, spare Israel, and Israel is going to prevail while the Antichrist and his 10 kings are to be destroyed. And it's like, and the scripture said that can be used for this method of interpretation is Ecclesiastes 1, 9, and 10. The thing which has been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done, and there's nothing new under the sun. Of course, a similar passage is in chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes. So the bottom line of that passage is that to discover what's going to happen in the future, it has already occurred somewhere in the past, and it will repeat itself in history. Now, the Greeks would call this cyclical history, that it starts at a point and will go around and end up back at the same point. So it's not a new belief or a new concept, but it's definitely found in the Bible, because at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, there was a Joseph. At the end, there is another man named Joseph of Arimathea. In the beginning, there was a Herod, and in the end of Jesus' ministry, there's another Herod, but it's not the same one at the beginning of his birth. There's a Mary in the beginning. You see the name Mary at the end. He fasted for 40 days in the beginning of his ministry. He's seen alive for 40 days at the conclusion of his ministry. He went up from the Mount of Olives. He will return to the Mount of Olives. So there's an example of how this a way of understanding how the past reveals the future. And so this is the reason why that when we do a lot of teaching, we do a lot of teaching on understanding the parts of stories in the Bible, the symbolism, the patterns that conceal future events.
Well, let me ask you this question. We know that Satan has removed the feasts from the church pretty much. And as a result of removing the feasts, there's a lack of understanding on the return of Jesus. But that Satan even has gone further than that. He chooses the feast that he's pushed out of the understanding of the Gentile church, and he attacks. He has his big attacks on these biblical feasts. Give me an example.
Yeah. When I wrote the book on the feast, one of the things I started researching, and I had never heard taught in my entire life, and I was amazed, is the number of times in the four Gospels that Satan either himself or using the Pharisees or using people who did not agree with Jesus, how many times it was always a feast day that the biggest attack came against Jesus and the biggest threats came against his life. It was either during a Passover, sometimes it was around Pentecost, other times it was around the Feast of Tabernacles. The religious leaders who did not approve of his ministry, here's an example. Around the time of Passover, John 6, verse 4, there's a life-threatening storm that fills the water, fills the boat on the Sea of Galilee and almost takes the boat under. Then at Passover in John 11:55, the Pharisees sought to take Christ at the Temple Mount. Then at the Feast of Dedication, which really is an old English word for Hanukkah, it's the Feast of Hanukkah, the celebration of Hanukkah, in John 10, they rose up to try to stone him. And there's about, you can see it even in the book of Acts, where at different times, I mean, it was Passover, and James was beheaded at Passover, and after Passover, Herod was going to kill Peter. And so if this should tell us something, that these festivals that God has established are not only significant to God, but Satan must recognize some type of authority or spiritual power or authority that is released during those times of the year when these Moedim or rehearsals or celebrations take place. There has to be some kind of...
And let me ask you this question. I believe on these feasts there are, if you will, points of contact for an open heaven. It's not that you have to do it, but who wouldn't want to be worshiping God with an open heaven?
And if you think about this too, there were three of the seven, and it would be Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. Three of the seven that every man over 20 years of age had to go up to Jerusalem and celebrate in the presence of God those three feasts. It was mandatory and required for them to do so. And when you begin to let's look at, for example, the new moon. The new moon is when there's darkness in the sky. God required the blowing of the shofar during the new moon, and also a particular offering of a blood offering to be offered during every new moon. Well, one of the reasons, I mean, this is interesting, Sid. If you go to India, you'll discover that the Hindu people are very afraid when there's no moon in the sky. And the Christian community has what's called new moon evangelistic meetings, in which they bring these big stadium lights in. We had a team that just did this. And they invite the people from the town. They say, you're free to come out. And the people know, and the truth, that in the Hindu religion, that the spirits, there's more increase of demonic activity when the new moon takes place than any other time of the month. And they try to come where there's light. And I have a videotape of just literally hundreds of people manifesting spirits and being delivered from them in the name of Yeshua, because the power that's in his name defeats the intensity of the spiritual warfare. So see, God must have known that somehow, because there would be a darkness in the atmosphere, that there would be a more intensity of spiritual activity during that darkness, which is very evident for those that do these type of meetings in the nation of India. And so I think that what you said a moment ago, that one of the reasons Satan targets these particular time frames is because there's something he understands, that something is happening. God's attention is focused at that season. God's attention toward giving and sacrificing and obedience is focused at that season. So, hey, why not put an attack? Think about this. When did the Syrians in 1973 attack Israel? They attacked Israel suddenly by a surprise attack on Yom Kippur. the day that all the Jewish people be fasting, the day that they are required to be in the synagogue if they're devout Jews, of course.
But it's even beyond that. There's a somehow Satan has an insight. There's something so supernatural about these feasts. He's gone overtime to hide them from the church.
That's what really stirred me. The more I thought about what God said about these seven different time frames in a year, the significance of that particular time frame as it relates not only to in the time of Israel, which was the harvest cycle and rain cycle, but there is a spiritual why does the Lord say I'm going to allow the Messiah to bring a redemptive covenant at the time of Passover? Why? Why does God say, Holy Spirit, you will come on the Feast of Pentecost? Now,
the absolute biggest reason that Satan does not want the church to understand God's feasts from the Old Testament, which most don't even read anymore, is they will not understand the return of the Messiah. They can't without the feasts.
If you don't study his first coming, you will never understand his second coming. And to understand, and to me, this is the thing, especially when I deal with Jewish people that understand the Torah. When you see the details that God went through to establish, for example, in Exodus 12, there are three blood spots on the doorpost of every Jewish home in Egypt, left post, right post, and top post. Now, why three? Because in the crucifixion story on Golgotha, there are three crosses. Christ is in the middle, and there's a man on the left and another man on the right. I mean, how detailed is that, for goodness sakes?
But you know what? We needed an individual that would pay the price, spend 80,000 hours studying the Bible, understanding the Jewish people, made 30-plus trips to Israel, this book, The Prophetic Future, concealed in Israel's festivals. Then the two DVDs, first one came from a vision that Perry Stone had, mysterious events surrounding the catching away of the saints. This is amazing. And then, are you interested in the future of America? Of course you are. The next DVD is America and the Fullness of the Gentiles, available for a gift of $45. To hear this week's interview or watch archives of our television show, It's Supernatural!, visit our website at www.sidroth.org. That's www.sidroth.org. To receive a complimentary copy of our bi-monthly teaching newsletter, materials catalog, or information about becoming Mishpucha or Chalitzim, write to me, Sid Roth, Post Office Box 39222, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28278. To place a credit card order, call anytime, 1-800-447-2697. For all other calls, the number is 704-943-6500. That's 704-943-6500. For a CD of this week's broadcast, send a donation to Sid Roth. That's SIDROTH. Post Office Box 39222, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28278.